Welcome to the Global Marketing Show, the podcast for all things international business. I'm your host, Wendy Pease, president of Rapport International and a translation expert. Come along with me today as we talk to an expert in the global marketing world about facing their biggest fears, hearing about mistakes they made or saw, discussing best practices, and sharing fun travel language and culture stories. Welcome. Today, I'm very excited to introduce Randy Roger, who is an expert on global product management and marketing. She's been in a variety of industries, including publishing, interactive intelligence, contact center technologies, and she's even been an advisor for technology. She has her master's in information and communication sciences from Ball State, and she actually sits on the alumni board to shape curriculum development for that program now. Currently, she's looking for the next big product management position, and this woman is awesome. You want to grab her up if she's still available when this launches. All right, so Randy, tell me, what's your favorite foreign word?
Well, hi, Wendy. Thanks so much. First of all, before we launch into my favorite foreign word, thank you for that lovely introduction and the plug to Ball State University's Information and Communication Science program. We're always appreciative for that. Your question, what is my favorite word? My favorite word would have to be in French, because I studied French in both high school and college, and that would be the word croissant. And that is because both croissant is both fun to say, it's delicious, and you can have it with or without chocolate, so who can complain?
That is a good one. Boy, my mouth is watering right now just thinking about a nice buttery, hot, steamy croissant.
Yum. With or without chocolate, which is your way to go?
I think I'd have to go with Nutella on half and butter and jelly on the other half.
Ooh, well, there's one I haven't tried before. Okay.
Well, not together. I'd eat half with just the Nutella and the other half.
Something for both of us to look forward to.
Yeah. So it sounds like you have had some exposures to other languages and cultures. I'm curious, what's the first one you remember?
Where I grew up, you could hear a lot of Yiddish. So I would say the first language that I had exposure to, other than my primary language or my first language, which is English, would definitely be some form of Yiddish, and then some Hebrew thrown into that. Formally, I was able to study French for 7 years. And then in my role as a global marketing manager, I was definitely exposed to many different languages. I've had teams over in India, so all of the different dialects that come with working with teams in India, as well as all of the marketing managers I work with in both EMEA and APAC.
So do you have a favorite words or words in Yiddish or Hebrew that you use more frequently?
Well, I mean, I use the easy one, which is oi or oi vey all the time.
I love that one.
It says a lot without actually needing to know what it means. It's quite expressive depending on how you articulate it. Like, oi, you know there's a problem, kind of like the American oops.
Well, in Greece, it's the shoulder shrug, the throw up the hands, and the, you know, kind of facial expression that kind of goes,
There you go.
India, my kids and I like the Indian head bob.
Head bobs.
So they're all, none of them are yes or no, but they all have very specific meanings.
Exactly. And that's the beautiful thing about oi or oi vey.
Right. So you talked about all the different international experiences you had as a marketing or product marketer. What was your biggest fear when you started doing business in other cultures or languages?
The biggest fear I had when I started working with other cultures would definitely be, I can think of two off of the top of my head, Wendy. The first would be my own ignorance or lack of comms. So making sure that I understood that I did or said things that were not inappropriate to offend my vendors, my partners, or my customers. Mm-hmm. That would be the first fear that I would have. And then the second one that comes to the top of mind is just my lack of a second fluent language and concern that the what I needed from my customer or my vendor or partner was not coming through clearly in English or translated correctly so that there would be a misunderstanding.
And what did you do to conquer those fears?
Well, the first one is easy. In the day of Google, you can do it. It's a little easier. I think before Google, they used to send you to class, didn't they, where you learned the customs of different countries or different cultures and people.
Right.
Yeah. So they don't do that today. They don't invest that kind of time in a corporate environment. Nobody sends you to class to learn, say, the Japanese culture. But you can do a lot of, you know, the verb Google. You can Google, you know, cultures and make sure that you're not doing something to be inappropriate. So that one is a little easier. When it comes to making sure that you're being understood in a business setting when the people you're dealing with don't speak your language, in turn don't speak theirs, I think that is where it gets harder. And that is where either having somebody who speaks the language is super helpful, who speaks both languages is super helpful. I tend to do a lot more follow-up in writing. And I am a heavy user of video conferencing because along with language, because you can see the expression and the body language. So that's how I compensate for my inability to speak a second or multiple languages.
Okay. And did you, what mistakes did you either make or see being made when you were doing international business?
What mistakes did I see? The one that pops to mind as a mistake, one of the things, I was fortunate enough in my career that I have had multiple teams that I've worked with out of India. And what I found and what I was told with my very first team over a decade ago was that my team, when I went to India, would expect it's a hospitality. It's expected that I would stay over the weekend and go out with my team and allow them to show me their town and have meals with me. And that was their way of building rapport. And the expectation, we built rapport that way. And that was part of their custom in their country. There is part of the culture that I was a stranger, but that was the way you welcomed me. And I've had so many teams thereafter, knowing that I always have made an effort the first time I meet someone to stay longer on that first trip.
Oh, okay. Because so people really did go out of the way. And I love that you use the word rapport right there.
Oh, thank you. I've told people that for years, you know, when you first go to India, make sure you make the time to spend time outside of the work week with your team. And they don't do that. And then I find they're not very successful when they try to offshore. And I truly believe that that is because they don't understand that part of that team building is allowing your team to show you that hospitality and their country. Right. They're proud of it and they want to do that.
Right. Which is not American.
Correct. I mean, in America, we have a business Monday through Friday.
Right. And you might in the olden days have a business dinner, maybe in the future days too, but right.
Correct. And that's not the case in India. I never was alone for a meal in the evenings. And on the weekends, I was always taken to see heritage sites, taken to see the Bay of Bengal. Ultimately, and that would be in all four of my teams. I will say that I've been fortunate. I've seen the Taj in my time there. So all of the teams. And so I was glad that somebody taught me that lesson ahead of time. That wasn't something I necessarily Googled, but something that I learned and I believe was one of the reasons I would tell you I was successful with my offshoring experiences.
So you're talking about Google. So did you ever find any bad cultural advice on there or was it pretty good at providing you cultural insights so you could be successful?
I can't think of anything that I would say, oh, that was so wrong. Have you had an experience where you could say, gee, it told me X and I've done Y? I can't think of any.
No, but I'm setting you up for the next question.
Yeah, no, I can't. Honestly, that one, I can't tell you that I've thought.
Yeah, no, we used to be called to get advice. You know, hey, I'm going over this country. What should I do? And I had books that I recommended and I talked them through and gave them ideas, or I'd hook them up with somebody that they'd want to talk to. But I have seen a change in that you can go to Google and you can read about different cultures and what you're going to do and eating habits and manners and touching and references and topics. And I think Google does a good job on providing information on there.
When the very first time I was sent over and I had to get $1,300 in shots put in my arm to go over, oh my gosh, that first trip was not only expensive, but painful. They sent us to the clinic that they sent me to, not only provided the shots, but also information about eating, drinking, medicines to take because of the difference in diet, water, and all of that. And I'm not even sure if I had read that on Google, I would have taken that seriously. But because I was sitting in front of a licensed medical practitioner who said, you're going to experience X, here's what you take when you experience X. And all of that was true.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I've never gone to India and not been sick. And that's after knowing what it is I'm supposed to eat or not eat.
Oh, okay. So you always just planned on that coming back. Yeah, I did. Three of us went last year and one of us got sick and the other two didn't, but we were very restrictive on where we ate because of that. So now, you know, going back to Google, so it's good to look up advice for traveling. Now, have you ever used Google Translate?
I have used Google Translate. I also know not to use Google Translate. I have used it for loose translations, but I also know that it's a loose translation for a reason. It's very literal and you miss the cultural nuances intended in the words. It's a one-to-one translation on Google Translate.
So where would you use that if you needed? I've never heard that loose translation, but I like it.
I was fortunate when I was a marketing manager to be responsible for a team out of the UK. So I used to take our marketing materials, and I would run them through Google Translate to make sure I didn't miss British spellings. If I knew that there was a Z in the English word, that it was generally had an S, or if there was a different way to sign something. But beyond that, there are certainly colloquialisms even in my British with my British team that Google Translate wouldn't get. That I would then run it by my marketing manager counterpart in the UK while I was here in the US, who would read it over and say, we wouldn't say it like that, we would say it like this.
That's so funny. I have never heard of the use for English to English on Google Translate, but that's a good use for it.
I will actually stop you there and tell you it's what made the difference. Since we were our UK team was our second biggest sales generating team, and all the materials came out of the US. For them to use those materials, we had to translate it into British English. And that was really important so that it wasn't rejected by the customer who would say, oh, they're just an English, they're a US company. We want to work with them.
Right. So even when you're going into another country who speaks English, that translation is so important. So
yes.
Okay. So talking about other languages, and when you had to get something good quality, how did you go about doing that?
When I was a marketing manager for a contact center, customer experience company called Genesis. They're the largest in their space. Genesis had us translate all of our marketing materials into 7 primary languages. And the way that we accomplished that was in country. So we had marketing managers in each of our primary countries, and they were responsible for taking the materials that were developed in the US home office and then translating those and making sure that they, again, as we were saying with the British version, making sure that those read correctly in the country of choice, because French in France would be different than French in Canada. That could be different than French, pick a, you know, a third country. So that was all done in country. And there were problems with doing it that way, Wendy, I will say.
Oh, tell me about that. Tell me what worked and what didn't.
Well, we would certainly get the correct translation, but it was very time consuming. So if we were trying to launch a marketing campaign that was a global marketing campaign, it ended up being a very staggered campaign, because I would finish it in the US, but by the time I sent it down to Latin America, to LATAM to get translated, and then over to EMEA to get translated into, you know, the different types of languages that you encounter in Europe, it was all based on when that marketing manager had time to get it done. So that marketing manager, say in Spain, had to contact their translation agency in country, send it, you know, take the time to project manage that project, or have an intern project manage that project, get it back, review it, and then schedule it. So it always meant that we had rolling campaigns rather than a global campaign, if that makes sense.
Yeah, it does. So how would you have made that more efficient if you were running the company or the...
You know, it's something that we pitched all along. I would much rather have had a central translation agency that worked hand in hand with the marketing team in the States. We knew that we wanted to come out with 7 primary languages. I would have liked, if we had been able to gain those efficiencies, I would have hired a single translation agency and said, here's the campaign for Q1. When do you need it by, so that we would have enough time to do the translation into the other 6 languages, English plus the 6 primary, and time in country for them to review it and make sure that they understand it and accept it. Because I can't review the other 6 languages. I don't speak them.
Right. Okay. But then you'd give time for the in-country people to review. So you do one good French translation and then let the countries review it and launch it.
I would have to, or certainly have to, we'd have to be far enough down in the relationship for them to feel comfortable with the translation agency vendor of that they would say, you know, we've had enough experience with X global vendor. What they give us is always right. So we're just, we can rubber stamp this, or we're comfortable with the translator for X language.
Right. And that builds over time too. If you have a linguistic matchmaking where the same translators working, they just continue to learn your material.
Exactly.
Build a glossary.
That's probably the biggest thing I have found with translation when you're working with an agency is, as you said, building a glossary of tech terms, medical terms. There's just certain things that you only learn over time, what works and makes sense in country.
So I'm guessing that when you worked at Genesis, they're thinking this is the efficient way. It's not efficient. But then you have the costs associated with it. You know, you push it off to the local market versus hiring a centralized translation. Can you talk through like the costs, benefits of both ways of doing it?
There are cost benefits of doing it both ways. So let's think about it. In the existing system in which I worked, in country was doing it. So at that point, it was incumbent on the country to manage to that budget. They were given X budget for translation. They managed to it. They hired the agency they wanted to work with. So there were probably efficiencies there, because there was other work going to that localized agency. So if, again, using that example we did earlier, whoever was doing the Spanish translations in Spain, they might have other work coming from that particular in-country team. So there were probably some volume benefit with them. And then somebody locally in time zone was doing that management and building that relationship. So I could see that being, in Genesis's mind at the time, that was the best way to go. The challenge was when we had it, when the campaigns were done at the US and then pushed out, we had an expectation of time frame that didn't match what was happening in country. We might roll out a marketing campaign, but find out in that country, for example, that was their the month of their biggest trade show. They did not have time to project manage the translation of an integrated marketing campaign for an entire quarter. And so again, the inefficiency of that was it then sat, and by the time they got around to it, the next marketing campaign was coming. And so again, you didn't gain that global footprint. All the globe, they were seeing the same marketing because it was never on the same time frame. Does that make sense?
Yeah, that does make a lot of sense. Yeah. And so if you imagine that they were doing it with a centralized agency, how would you compare costs across that?
I think that's probably why we never got to the point where we centralized, because we never were able to do it. I was never able to do an effective job of saying, here's the cost of these six different companies or the six different individual translation agencies and the cost of the time it takes to manage all of that. So again, sticking with our Spain example, how much time am I losing by tying up a marketing manager that was then taking my campaign, having to contact their local Spanish agency, project manage that, review that work, and get it implemented. That was time that my marketing manager in Spain was not working with the sales team to generate or work leads that were coming in for selling the product.
Right. Right. So, and then you had the company cost, because you mentioned that you were doing it in Spain and you were also doing it in Latin America.
Correct. Correct. Yeah, it was double duty because Latin American team was doing mirror work with their agencies in Latin America. So they were still doing Spanish. They were doing their flavor of Spanish. Right. So yeah, it was double duty. I'm tying up two marketing managers and two agencies to essentially do a Spanish translation. Now, we tried to do it in French. We would have the French team pass it back to the Canadian team so the Canadian team could localize colloquialisms for Canada. But again, you lose time doing that because, again, now I'm the lag time between the U.S. sending it to France, France getting it translated, and then France remembering and then sending it over to Canada so that Canada could localize it.
There is such a case study or an analysis that I am just chomping at the bit to do here because, you know, this is one we see a lot is, oh, our in-country offices do it. And my biggest worry has been that they lose the global message. You know, like somebody changes it. It's like giving Absolutely. Your salespeople your marketing material and they're going to put it in a sales message, which is all about features rather than benefits.
Absolutely. So, that's a great example, Wendy. The other thing that I experienced in my time as a product marketing manager that I always found one of my most fascinating studies was I also had several in-country teams over in Asia, in APAC. And I believe the message was around customer experience and the benefits you'd gain using our product. And I remember the Japanese team coming back and saying to me, I can't use this entire campaign. And and the question was, well, why can't you? It's a great campaign. I'm really fond of it. to which they said the message, the actual message itself about improving customer experience, that whole concept doesn't exist in Japanese. We would never have a bad customer experience since the whole culture of business in Japan centers around the customer and a good customer experience. So how can you improve on something that's a central tenet of the culture?
Oh, right. So in that case, whether you do it in country or you have an agency, that's a cultural thing that a professional translator would pick up on, yet Google Translate wouldn't.
Absolutely not. It would just translate it, as we said, one-to-one, word for word. So yes, it would hand it back to me without understanding the message behind the words.
Yeah, that's interesting. Okay. So how can you get better at that? Yeah, I hadn't realized that about the Japanese customer experience. So
yeah, you can't improve something that is just breathing. It is what they do. It's the way they do business. They would never have bad customer service to improve it.
Right.
It truly an eye-opening experience.
So say you're back there and you just say, you pull together this case study and you put it all together and say, yeah, we should have a corporate agency. How would you go about finding the right agency for your company?
How would I go about finding the right agency for my company? Well, you know, the easy answer is you Google it. That's number one. Google, agencies. Two, in a large company such as I worked, chances are high that we had some kind of a procurement team, and that procurement team had agencies on file that we had to go through. After that, assuming that procurement didn't have it and we didn't have sent, you know, they had all the local country agencies on file, but not a central one. You know, after Google, I think it then comes down to your relationships. Who do people recommend that have done that work that you can call and interview, and, or I guess I could go with RFP. Those are my options, I would think.
Okay. And say you Google, or you go to the procurement team, and or you have relationships, and or you do an RFP. How do you pick out the right one for you?
It's super time consuming. You know, the easiest, and none of these are the right answer, because if you go with Google, everybody's got a great looking web front. How do I know the quality, right? So it's the time consumption of reaching out on Google, meeting a salesperson, hearing their particular spiel, for a good Yiddish word there, good use of the Yiddish word, their spiel.
Exactly.
And then comparing their spiel and their pricing to everybody else. So that's very time consuming, because I have to interview several companies to have a good comparison. Right. The procurement team should have done that for me already, but chances are in my situation they didn't, because they have all the individual country ones, but not a global central. So we will have to assume that didn't work. Having that relationship, I'd have to find people in the organization who had those relationships. So what's left to me realistically, as I talk through these examples, is Google and time consuming, or the good old RFP, which is what allows me to take all of my questions that I would have done when I Googled and interviewed all the people that I've shortlisted, is put all of my questions in an RFP. And that would also would have made the procurement team happy, because then I had a process by which I come back to them and say, listen, I sent out an RFP. Here's all of the answers. We threw out the least expensive and the highest. And here are the three that are left. And here's the, you know, now let's go. You go and do your job at getting them nickel and dime down to the best whatever contract for this year. That's how I can imagine it would have been done in my large corporation.
Right, right. Yeah,
sound it makes familiar? Sense.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. And for those of us who own small businesses on the other side of it, we go, oh, RFPs. And our company is actually not responding to RFPs anymore, because we're not professional proposal writers. They're time consuming and we don't win them.
No, so we've had to make... consuming.
Yeah, a decision whether it, and then you hear the stories about the good proposal writer company wins, but the service isn't up to par.
Well, I can think of, you know, one or two examples where you go to RFP, you pick one because of the price. You know, it's always is too strong a word. Generally, it's picked because of price, right? And then after you're 2/3 into the service and up against the deadline, that price is not right. We did not know about X, Y, and Z.
And then they've priced themselves higher than that top one that you threw out originally.
That's been my experience with RFP, yes.
So change our philosophy and quote low to win and then come back and say, oops, which is so against our values.
You can quote low, but I don't think if you can get it, they're going to say you got it done for that price. What incentive do they have to raise that? The only thing you can do is put a writer in there that says, if we come in on time, you know, the next project should be up because we've proven ourselves. But the chances of you doing that with a procurement department are not really high.
All right. So jump into my next question off that topic, because there doesn't seem to be a good answer to that. We'll let the market dynamics play out. You know, you gotta find somebody right for the company. So say you decide you are, you know, you're going to go with a corporate agency and you go through whatever time consuming, painful process it is. How do you put together a budget or overcome internal hurdles to actually get funding for translation? Because what I'm seeing is oftentimes companies are looking at it as an expense rather than measuring the return they get on it. So can you talk to me a little bit about that?
So how do you put together a budget and get over the internal hurdles so that you can get a corporate centralized agency? Without a question, my experience, Wendy, says that the company sees this as an unnecessary expense because they already have people internally that speak the language. So why should I spend money when I already have somebody who speaks Spanish in Spain so that they know all the local colloquialisms and can localize it? So you've got to you have to quantify the time, the cost of that person's time and the loss of that person not doing their job because they are doing the translations. And if that loss of it, and in our case, in my specific example, that was through the marketing department. So if my marketing person is spending a week, a quarter doing translations, well, that week is generally when they should be at a trade show, right? It takes, you know, till I set up on Monday, we do the little dinner on Tuesday, assuming there are trade shows in the New World Order. But in the world that I came from, a week was what you needed for a trade show, travel to it, the setup time, the dinner, the 1 or 2 days on the show floor, the breakdown, the travel home. That's a week of business, right?
Yeah.
That person isn't available. That marketing person isn't available to help your sales team in the booth talk to customers, talk to prospects, because they're a week, a month are doing translation. And if that person makes, you know, in a 40-hour a week, work week that, you know, the US 40 hours, that person's making $60 an hour, there's your math. Can you hire an agency for less than that so that your marketing person is focused on that trade show?
Okay. So just that's numbers and cents. Just how much time is it going to take?
Have you ever met a procurement department that works in a different methodology? I mean, finance people work on dollars and cents. So I have to be able to set up a business case that says, here's what we are losing.
And then what about, were there ever any quality issues with that? With having internal people do it?
I don't know that I saw quality issues for my internal people. It was just a time lag. It was either the marketing campaign didn't get done in the time frame that the US team, the headquarter team, expected it to be done. So we lost that global branding that we wanted. We wanted a message to run globally and we couldn't get it because, again, of the lag of the time the US team sent it out until the marketing team got around to translating and implementing it on their marketing calendar.
Okay.
So without a doubt, that was the loss we had as well as the in-country time to do that translation. Quality-wise was never an issue because they spoke the language, but it takes
time. And they were in marketing.
So it takes time to read something in English, understand what you're trying to say, and then figure out how you say that well in country.
Right. And did you ever measure the return that you got off of the translated materials?
No, I never was that smart, nor did I ever have anybody ask me that question at the right time.
Yeah.
Wouldn't that have been great if I could have said, hey, let's set up a case study that says, run this message from a translation agency in Spain versus the in-house team doing it in Spain. Does this message get a better hit rate, SEO, whatever, because we had this agency do it and they were able to spend more time on the meaning.
Okay.
That's a great case study, Wendy, that no, I never was able to do.
That's interesting because you actually took it differently than what I was asking.
Oh.
Yeah. So what I was wondering about, as opposed to keeping
an
it
AB
just
study?
In English. Yeah.
Right.
AB, we're going to market in Germany because everybody speaks global English. And so we'll just run it in English because all our audiences speak that versus doing it in German. But you're actually talking about, okay, if our marketing person does it versus the professional linguist. Is there a difference in that?
Okay. So with that clarification in mind, Wendy,
it was good because it got me thinking about it in a different way, a different case study that could be done.
Well, if you're trying to make a case to a large, a global corporation to go with a centralized translation agency, that could be the way to do it, right? Instead of spending the money to do all six languages simultaneously, plus US English, seven, in my case, you could pick one country, and Germany was a big market for us. So you could run it in German in both ways and see if one message was better than another. And then you weren't spending that money across six languages to do that AB case study. I will tell you, I have been, push comes to shove, I have been told, yes, the German market, I don't think the German market's a great example in this case, Wendy. I think you could say the Netherlands,
yeah,
would be a good market where you could run it in US English. Mm-hmm. They'd probably want British English, frankly. But I have run things in the Netherlands markets in British English, mm-hmm, as opposed to having it translated into, say, Dutch, because of time.
Yeah. Well, you'd be surprised at the number of companies that I talk to that just say, oh, no, global English is the global language. We just market in English.
Nope, I'm not surprised at all, sadly. I can tell you in country, the team in country gets it creates a negative morale issue for the US headquartered company. There's negative feelings that are created when you do that.
Oh, okay. So you have negative feelings created.
Yeah,
English is the global language.
Yes, the in-country team, they resentful, whether they realize it or not, it comes across as condescending. Look down your nose. Does that translate correctly? What's something? It's very ethnocentric to say to a country that speaks a language other than English as their primary language, just use my language. It's everybody understands it. That's not their primary language, and you create negative feelings internally within the organization when you do that. And I do believe that in country whether it's realized or not on the surface, towards the brand, it resonates negatively towards the brand because the brand can't take the time to translate to the primary language that's spoken in that country.
Okay, so then that affects who's going to buy.
Sales.
Yeah,
correct.
It's going to affect your top line and your bottom line.
Absolutely, absolutely. Yeah. And hiring. I mean, to some degree, you don't realize how much of a ripple that has. And again, I don't know what the how you translate that correctly, but it just comes across as not understanding. Going back to what we talked about earlier, culturally, do you understand how to play in markets outside of your primary one, and the respect that you should have for those markets? And part of that is understanding their culture and their language.
Right. Right. So do you think that different cultures influence people's purchasing decisions?
OK, Give me an example if you can. And I don't have anything off the top of my head.
I think you were talking about it earlier about culture. If you're going to do business in India, you've got to allow that extra time to do social events with the people. Mm-hmm. Okay. So that's where culture can affect how you're going to do business with other business professionals. So say, you know, you're an individual or a consumer and you're shopping online. Do you think there's any cultural differences with how you buy online?
Wendy, I don't have a good answer, yes or no, to that specific question, because I'm trying to think if I'm trying to flip this scenario. I'm an American and I need to buy something that's outside of the States, whatever that is. If somebody in China is trying to sell me something, if I hit a website that isn't well translated, is that going to reflect on my purchasing decision? Is that a great concrete example?
That's a perfect concrete example.
Okay. So if I'm shopping for something and I come across a website that clearly was translated poorly, without question, I would hesitate putting my credit card in there for fear of thinking this might be a storefront that I'm not comfortable with, or this is not something, there's something that I'm not comfortable with because this does not smell right. It doesn't look right. Something isn't right. And it would certainly give me pause before I purchase that. There's an authenticity there that comes from the translation not being well done. Yes.
Oh, interesting. Okay. So it's really the inauthentic and the trust. You're not going to put your credit card in.
Absolutely not. In an online situation, not. And I think about those spam emails that you get that are not written. And I'm not the only one who gets them. So no. When I go to my email account where I get all my marketing, if the email that comes in does not read well in English, what is my first instinct? This could be a phishing expedition. I will delete this, and I've invalidated their marketing attempt.
Right. So what about Google Translate? I mean, there's so many companies that put the Google Translate plugin into their website.
Google Translate does a wonderful one-to-one. If assuming there's a word, there's a word to do that translation, but it does not. If the meaning isn't correct, I'm going to read that in my primary language in my head and realize, again, this doesn't smell right. This doesn't read well. This does not smell right. Ergo, I'm going to delete this message.
So how would you recommend a company get started?
Well, if we go back to what we were talking about earlier, if I was planning on doing business outside of my native country, I would, in fact, based on my experience, hire a translation agency. And as we said earlier, trying to find one is, you know, Google procurement relationship RFP.
So you got it. You would never hire a friend or family or a Google Translator individual. You're going to look for an agency, buy one. And that's going to be the painful part, is finding the right agency.
It is. It's finding the right agency that I trust, because I'm assuming that if I go into more than one country, I want more than one person, and I want it centralized. Based on my experiences, that's me.
Okay.
I know if we're, you know, and at a business level, at a strategic level, we've made the decision as a company, I'm sure, that if we're going into one market, there'll be other markets. Nobody plans to be a failure, right? So if I'm going to, you know, what's our global rollout plan? So if I hire a person to do it in, say, Latin America next, then I want to make sure that I have somebody set up. Do I want to go through that whole painful procurement process when I move to EMEA? I'd really rather hire, since I know strategically we're going to do a global rollout, why not have an agency as part of that strategic rollout plan?
Oh, interesting. Okay. And I didn't set you up to say that.
based on my experience. That is
your experience. I love hearing that. All right. So the company, and I loved hearing that the company has to have a strategy, and then you find the right partner, and then you figure out the right process.
Well, that's the product manager in me that would tell you, yes, if for me to be able to roll out a product, I have to have a plan in place. And in my experience as a global brand is that, yes, having a good partner with me to help me with that, because I personally, Randy Roger, do not speak in a language outside of US English. Therefore, I need a partner that I trust, that is affordable, that meets their deadlines, that translates well in multiple languages and operates in multiple time zones. And that partner, Wendy, would probably have to have people, boots on the ground. And I would expect my partner to manage all of that. I personally trust that my partner has somebody in Brazil who knows both Brazilian Spanish and the Portuguese. I don't want to have to worry about that. I just know I need that. That becomes my partner's thing to worry about, their problem per se.
Right. You know, I have enjoyed talking to you so much because my perspective is always on the other side. So you've given me so many insights. I really, really appreciate it. What I'd like to do now is get to know you a little bit better. I mentioned at the beginning that currently you're looking for your next position. If I had a position, I would sweep you up right now.
You're so but, kind. Thank you.
Yeah. Tell me exactly what you're looking for. Maybe a listener will have some suggestions or a job opening.
Three-second pitch on Randy Roger. I have extensive experience in SaaS product development, so software as a service, cloud in my background. I have extensive experience in educational technology and am always looking for a company that's looking for a product manager to come in and move that product to the next level. So as an example, in my background, I was brought into a company that had a cybersecurity bachelor's program with virtual labs, and they wanted to commercialize that product. And so I'm the person you bring in who makes sure that product has all of the right processes in place so that you can grow and scale it. In my last company, it was the same thing. I had an existing product, but it was a mature product and it needed revitalization. And so we determined after 6 months that this product needed to have a whole new service bolted onto the existing product to kind of goose the entire product line. So I'm looking for my next big thing to grow and love, Wendy.
Okay. Well, there's a guy that I know that is developing something like this. So I'm so glad you talked about it because I've talked to you multiple times, but it just, Marius Dancia, I'll connect you with him because he's developing something like that. Well, all right. Now on the personal side.
Sure.
Your favorite vacation.
My favorite vacation. It is a personal one. And, if Disney World is the right answer, let me know. My favorite vacation was actually, 2 summers ago now to Jerusalem. We were fortunate enough to go to Jerusalem to live for a week. My daughter was working for the Israeli government and we were able to go over and see our adult daughter working in a foreign country and blooming. And it was really amazing experience.
Oh my gosh, that's fantastic. All right, what's your favorite memory or most rewarding cross-cultural experience?
My favorite cross-cultural experience. Let's see. Think here really quick. I would probably say visiting the Taj Mahal was without a doubt probably one of the highlights of my career and of my travel experiences. Seeing something on that grand scale, I mean, it's one of the 8 wonders of the ancient world. The concept that you could build something like that without modern machinery, the cross-cultural, the amount of people that visit the Taj on any given day, and the crossroads of cultures that you see when you're there, the beauty that is the Taj itself set against that blue sky and then the river below, without a doubt. And I went by myself. I was a lone woman. So I experienced all of that without having to worry about other people. It was all just me taking it.
Oh, wow. All right. I'm definitely going there. I've been to India, but not to the Taj Mahal. I got to get back. Favorite place to do business?
My favorite place to do business. I have a soft spot in my heart for London. I was able to live there on a short-term basis, once a month for a year. And I speak the language, making it very easy.
Sometimes I felt like I really didn't understand.
When I was up north, it was a little harder. I had a customer in northern England, and I had to really focus. Yeah. I have wonderful vendor colleagues left in the UK, just a charm, an old world charm, because I'm from the States that I got to thoroughly enjoy because I lived in the country and didn't just travel there for one period.
Right, right. It does make a difference.
Big difference.
Craziest travel story.
You know, the first time you ever tried to go to India, let me tell you, it was for me, my team was in Chennai at the time, and it was 30 to 33 hours. Yeah. And I remember I had to connect domestically in Mumbai. And I remember that connection. So that had already been in the air, 20, 25 hours. And I'm by myself. I don't natively speak any of the dialects in India. So I am in Mumbai airport and my airplane is at 4 a.m. And we landed at 1 because it's international domestic. So you have that 3-hour layover and I have to stay awake. And I couldn't tell you what time it was in the States, but I was exhausted. And I'm trying to stay awake. And what I did, I expected in my head was that I was going to be somewhere very bright. I was going to be somewhere where there would be other travelers with me who would say, "Hey, Randy, now you go to," and they said, "No, you just listen over the loudspeaker." It was like being in a train station. I had to stay awake and all of a sudden they said gate 33. And you had to know what gate, and you got up, and everybody stood in front of that gate, and that was boarding. And I had all my luggage, right? So I have to have all my, I have to stay awake. I have all my luggage, and I'm trying desperately to listen because the person making those announcements is in a dialect that is also different. That was my crazy story, was being frightened that I would miss that plane.
And you think how many times you went back there and then no problem. All right. And question for you. What recommendations or resources would you have for anybody that wants to start getting into global business or global marketing? Let's say global marketing.
You know, I was very fortunate to learn my business by being employed by somebody already in the business. So I had people around me who knew it. I can't even imagine being a small startup and trying to learn this all by yourself. Mm-hmm. So if you are in a startup situation that knows that they want to do business internationally, hiring somebody who's had that experience, doing this all by your big person self would be really frightening, I think. It's a whole lot of mistakes to make in wrong language.
So you'd say hire someone.
I would definitely say hire somebody who has that prior knowledge experience and add them to your team. And that way you learn, like you learn by somebody who's already been there ahead of you and made some of those mistakes.
Good. Well, this has been absolutely fantastic. How can our listeners get in touch with you? Where do they find you if they want to have any follow-up questions?
You're so
or
very
jobs
kind.
For you.
You're so very kind to me. Everybody can find me on LinkedIn under Randy Roger, RANDIROGER. And my email is my name, randy.roger@gmail.
So fantastic.
Thank you.
Fantastic.
Oh, yeah. It's been my pleasure. You know, the next time you'll have to let me ask 600 questions.
No, I love this. I'm learning so much. Well, thank you so much, everybody, for listening. If you learned something today or you had a laugh, tell somebody about this podcast. You can find it all on your favorite places to listen. So we'll see you next time on the Global Marketing Show. Thank you.
Thanks, Wendy. It's a pleasure. Be safe.
That's a wrap for this session. A big thanks to you for listening to the Global Marketing Show. Hope you had just as much fun as I did. New sessions launch weekly on all places you find podcasts, Apple, Spotify, Google Play, YouTube, and of course on our website. If you know someone interested in this topic, please tell them about us. Au revoir for now.